A couple of months ago at one of our meetings, your clergy, John and Anthony and I, we agreed together we would preach and teach from Isaiah this whole month, the whole season of Advent. Advent would be all Isaiah all the time. We made this decision some while ago and then had been second-guessing ourselves ever since. Preaching and teaching Isaiah means we are not preaching and teaching Luke or Matthew, the familiar Christmas stories that we all love so. But we stuck with our earlier decision because Isaiah is, in a word, important, and because Isaiah is amazing. The book of Isaiah is the first of the prophetic books in our Bible, and it's the largest, the longest, the thickest. And Isaiah has graced us with poetry and images that it's hard to imagine our world without them. It is Isaiah who brings us, for instance, the image of the ox and the ass, and the phrase, "and a little child shall lead them." There would be no Handel's Messiah if not for Isaiah's libretto. It was Isaiah who wrote, "In the wilderness, prepare the way for the Lord, make straight in the desert a highway for our God." Isaiah's emphasis that God supports the cause of the poor helped give birth to liberation theology. And our forebears at Old South Church in Boston in the mid-1870s thought enough of Isaiah to place him in stained glass. He watches over us in the corner up there every time you enter or exit the sanctuary. Now, we know little about Isaiah as a person. We know that he hailed from the 8th century before the Common Era. We know that Isaiah was an urban prophet, born, bred, married in Jerusalem. We know that Isaiah preaches to a nation that believes it is very special, a nation that thinks of itself as exceptional, chosen, a nation that feels especially blessed of God. And we know that Isaiah is located right in the heart of the action, in the capital city, where the king lives and reigns, where the powerful live, where the laws are made, interpreted, and enforced or not, where the taxes are decided and boundaries drawn, where the money is made, where the rich live, where the powerful decide when to wage war and who to send and where to send them. And if you've read any of the book of the prophet Isaiah, you will know this. Isaiah is angry. He's angry. Angry with a righteous anger, a godly anger. Not at everybody. He is angry at the corruption practiced by those in power. He is angry at the use and influence of bribery, at the way gift-giving changes the dynamics among people. He is angry that wealth and power are worshipped and adored more than God. He is angry at leaders who are prideful, who think that they are better than others. He is angry at those who deprive the innocent of their rights and those who acquit the guilty for a bribe. And that's a big part of Isaiah, his anger. He can be searingly, fiercely, jaggedly, ferociously angry with corrupt leaders and with those who are indifferent to the suffering of others. But Isaiah isn't only angry. Isaiah is instructive. He suggests a remedy for corruption. He informs the corrupt and the indifferent that corruption and indifference to the plight of the poor are not their destiny, that these are escapable, reversible, that they can do better than that, that they have the capacity to break out of a system that makes corruption acceptable. And Isaiah explains how. He informs the leader, the wealthy, the power brokers, that they can be, they are capable, if they want to, and I'm quoting, of learning to do good. Learning to do good. And then he spells out what that means. Learning to do good, for Isaiah, means, one, seek and insist on justice. Seek and insist on justice, that there's a fairness, a true fairness. And to make it their business to rescue the oppressed, to defend the orphan, and to plead for the widow. That is, to take up the cause, the case, and advocate for the most vulnerable among us. To stand between the vulnerable and a world that can be, at worst, indifferent to their plight, or at best, indifferent to their plight, and at worst, cruel and rapacious. So that's another part of Isaiah. The first part, righteously angry at corruption, indifference to the plight of the vulnerable. And the second, Isaiah can be instructive, offering a remedy. And the second part, the remedy, to learn to do good, to do justice, and take up the cause of the vulnerable. And then there's a third side to Isaiah. Isaiah is also a dreamer. He's a visionary. Isaiah dreams dreams, and he sees visions of things that are not yet, but ought to be. Isaiah dreams of a ruler, a prince among us, a king or sovereign, unlike anything that either human voting or a military coup might produce. Isaiah dreams of a ruler who comes from God. He dreams of a prince who is enfolded not in a military uniform, not in royal robes, wearing no mantle of crimson and ermine, nor is he wrapped in secret security and presidential insignia, or in the black SUVs of a motorcade. Isaiah the dreamer dreams, the visionary sees, instead, a prince attired in righteousness. In righteousness. Whose body is enfolded in faithfulness to God. And Isaiah says that the Spirit of the Lord rests upon him. And he is imbued with a spirit of wisdom and understanding. And his delight, this leader's delight, it's not in nations defeated, or territories occupied, or land acquired, or in the strength of his military, or in the size of his treasury. No, his delight is in the fear, in the awe of God. And this leader, he will not judge by what his eyes see. Because we mortals, we judge by what our eyes see. But he won't. He will not judge by what his eyes see, but with righteousness. With righteousness he shall judge the poor. And it will be with equity, with fairness, that he will decide for the meek of the earth. And what Isaiah is saying, what he is preaching, why he matters so much, this Isaiah, this large and lovely prophet, this prodigious and poetic prophet. What he is saying and preaching is this. Don't expect such a one, such a leader, such a ruler, to come from your votes or your electioneering or from a political party or a military coup or an invasion. No, no, such a one as this, he says, comes from God. And for Christians, this very one, this prince attired in righteousness, whose body and spirit are enfolded in faithfulness to God, this one who does not judge by what his eyes see, this one imbued with a spirit of wisdom and of understanding, whose delight is not in his own prodigious powers, but whose delight is in the fear and in the awe of God. For Christians, this one is Jesus, a child sent from God to earth. And as a God-fearer in this 21st century, as a God-fearer living in this urban city in Boston, Isaiah's message is both instructive and freeing. Instructive in that it reminds me never to take my eyes off the plight of those for whom our God has a special concern. The poor, the most vulnerable, the oppressed. That is God's wish for us. Instructive in that it reminds this church, Old South Church in Boston, to take up the cause of the most vulnerable among us, to have their backs, to plead and advocate for these. This is our godly charge, our righteous cause, and no less. And Isaiah's message is also freeing. It frees me from placing undue faith in political systems and in elected officials. It frees me to place all of my faith, all of my adoration, and all of my hopes where they belong, in God. And it was Isaiah, this large and lovely prophet, this prodigious and poetic prophet. It was to Isaiah that Jesus turned for his very first sermon in a synagogue in Nazareth. Jesus opened the scroll of the prophet Isaiah, and he looked for and he found the place where it was written, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free." Old South Church in Boston, if you wonder, what is our work? What is our charge in this year, 2016, of the common era? There it is. Such is our godly charge. Such is our righteous cause, and no less. And let the whole church say, amen.